Welcome to Local Voices on 94.7 KPIP LP Fayette. Brought to you by the Boonslick Historical Society and its president, respected Fayette community member, Jim Steele, journalist, graphic designer, and historian. This edition of Local Voices airs every Monday from noon to 4 p.m. and focuses on a glance back at the music and history of World War II as it affected Fayette, America, and the world. Thank you again for tuning in to this special edition, A Glance Back, here on Local Voices on 94.7 KPIP.
Like that. Thank you. Tight like that. I know it's tight like that.
Listen as past and present collide with Local Voices, Monday edition from noon to 4 p.m. on 94.7 KPIP.
I give you a toast, ladies and gentlemen. I give you a toast, ladies and gentlemen. Fair land we love so well, in dignity and freedom dwell. The world may change and go awry, while there is still one voice to cry. There'll always be an England, where there's a country lane. Wherever there's a cottage small beside a field of grain, there'll always be an England where there's a busy street. Wherever there's a turning wheel, a million marching feet. Red, white and blue, what does it mean to you? Surely you're proud, shout it up loud, Britain's away. The Empire too, we can depend on you. Freedom remains, these are the chains, nothing can break. There'll always be an England, and England shall be free. If England means as much to you as England means to me. To you, surely you're proud, shout it out loud, Britain's away. The Empire too, we can depend on you. Freedom remains, these are the chains, nothing can break. There'll always be an England, and England shall be free. If England means as much to you as England.
Thank you. One of our planes was missing, 2 hours overdue. One of our planes was missing with all its gallant crew. The radio sets were humming, they waited for the word. Then a voice broke through the humming, and this is what they heard. Coming in on a wing and a prayer. Coming in on a wing and a prayer. Though there's one motor gone, we can still carry on. Coming in on a wing and a prayer. What a show, what a fight. Yes, we really hit our target for tonight. How we sing as we limp through the air. Look below, there's our field over there. With our full crew aboard and our trust in the Lord, we're coming in on a wing and a prayer. How we sing as we limp through the air. Look below, there's our field over there. With our full crew aboard and our trust in the Lord, we're coming in on a wing and a prayer.
You are listening to Local Voices on 94.7 KPIP. Now, our local historian, Jim Steele, will take us back to the age of World War II.
This is KPIP's Local Voices, A Glance Back. I'm Jim Steele, and today we'll talk about something everybody's heard about, or at least knows about. Everyone within the sound of my voice has either used or at least seen Fayette's historic 85-year-old swimming pool located in the city park. Now today we're going to tell you how this all came about. On a cool spring day, the first Tuesday in April of 1934, Fayette voters went to the polls to elect the usual slate of city officials, these to serve for the next 2 years. No one who cast a ballot on that day could have known that the election results would have historic and far-reaching ramifications for the local community and for Howard County. Fayette attorney D.C. Rogers, who was a 1915 Central College graduate, had already established himself as a mayor, as a mover and shaker locally and statewide. In the city election of 1934, he handily defeated the incumbent mayor to assume the city's top elected position. Immediately, the pages of the Fayette newspapers carried word of Rogers' far-reaching ideas for the city, including a major beautification effort to establish the city park, and more importantly, to have a state-of-the-art pool as its centerpiece. News accounts indicate there was near unanimous backing for the plan, and soon a number of residents had agreed to serve on official and several different planning committees. Today, the pool is particularly significant in that it continues to serve as a long-lived recreational facility built by a partnership of public entities during the Great Depression. Funding came from Fayette, the Works Progress Administration, better known as the WPA, also the County of Howard, and the State of Missouri. The pool, as you've probably noted, is distinguished by its Art Deco styling, as well as the unusual above-ground design. Now, this was the concept of one Wesley Bintz. He was a nationally known civic engineer from Lansing, Michigan, and he was the one that brought to the project his patented Bintz Pool special design. The facility opened on July 4th, 1936, Independence Day, and today remains in use in its original function. The pool's greatest significance, or period of significance, runs from, of course, 1936 until the 1960s, when air conditioning and the availability of other forms of entertainment became commonplace. It is a rare intact example of Art Deco design. The building also is a commemorative property, although not exclusively. The entrance hall was built to serve as a World War I memorial, and a plaque has been preserved as part of the pool's second floor observation area. Now, the design, or the decision to create an official city park in Fayette, came more than a century after the town was incorporated. After discussion began the year before, the Board of Aldermen, in other words, the City Council, agreed in 1935 to begin acquiring land for a park. This came at the urging of the Chamber of Commerce and other interested citizens, including Mayor Rogers. On June 18th of that year, the Fayette paper reported that the park proposal has been, in their words, under lively discussion with the Chamber of Commerce, and it's the subject of various petitions being considered at length by the aldermen. Although the initial park plans did not include a pool, the decision to build one apparently was made early in the process. Rogers, just the week before, had served as keynote speaker for the opening of a new pool in Slater, and it was noted that a delegation from Fayette also had been invited to the opening of a pool in Higginsville. It is likely that these events encouraged Fayette leaders to think for a pool. Another deciding factor appears to have been the availability of federal assistance. Depression-era government aid programs were being widely utilized in Missouri at that time on projects which ranged from hand-dug ditches for water mains to skyscrapers for public offices. The main federal sources of construction assistance for communities in the mid-1930s were two FDR, Franklin Roosevelt New Deal agencies, the Public Works Administration, otherwise known as the PWA, and the Works Progress Administration, or WPA. The WPA focused primarily on providing employment for workers who would otherwise be on the relief rolls, projects therefore intended to be labor-intensive. As of December 1935, nearly two-thirds of most WPA projects were devoted to wages. On the average, WPA funds covered more than 80% of the total cost of a project, with about 86% of funding going to cover payroll expenses. Now, in 1935, late that year, the pool was started. Missouri at that time ranked 11th in the nation in the number of WPA workers, with more than 100,000 Missourians on WPA payrolls. Now, Mayor Rogers, D.C. Rogers, who was active in the politics of municipal administration on a statewide basis, would naturally have been quite familiar with these programs. At the time the park project was being planned, he was president of the Missouri Mayors Association and was instrumental in arranging a large meeting of that group in Fayette just weeks after the park project got underway. Another well-known civic leader and local college professor was Dr. B.I. Lawrence, who also served as an officer in Howard County's Company M of the Missouri National Guard. He, too, was a strong supporter of efforts to develop the park and the pool. Now, the keynote speaker at that particular meeting was one M.S. Murray, who was the new head of the Missouri WPA. So it's logical to assume that Rogers would have pursued the subject of federal aid for the park during the time that Murray was in the area, especially since he'd recently attended the opening of the PWA-funded a pool in Higginsville. Whatever the influencing factors, it's known that by the fall of 1935, pool construction had become a key part of the park project, and the WPA had committed to help with funding. On November 15th of that year, the Fayette paper reported that 40 men had started on the park and the swimming pool project, 20 on each job. In other words, 20 with the park and 20 on the pool. In addition, an additional 20 men were put on work extending a nearby water main. Noted in the paper, plans are to proceed at once with the building of the swimming pool. Blueprints soon will be submitted to the council for approval and the actual work to begin. A week later, the city council and other officials heard what was described as an interesting and intelligent discussion of swimming pools by nationally known swimming pool designer Wesley Bentz. Apparently, Bentz had made quite an impression and was hired that same evening with a newspaper featuring a long, complimentary account of his presentation. The report included a fairly detailed discussion of the pool design and noted that officials who heard the proceedings were elated over the fact that Bentz had contacted the city at such an appropriate time. So it appears that everyone involved was impressed with the above-ground design for the pool, which was said to make it much less expensive to construct. Bentz was confident that he could stay within the approximately $16,000 budget. That's about $303,000 today. That was the amount set for the pool project. And so it appears that Fayette's pool project was off and running. And we'll finish the story next time around. This is Jim Steele reporting for KPIP's Local Voices, A Glance Back.
That was our Glance Back in Time with Jim Steele, president of the Boonslick Historical Society. This series with Jim Steele will continue every Monday from noon to 4 p.m. during Local Voices, only on 94.7 KPIP.
Look for the silver lining whenever skies are gray. No matter what befalls,
there will come a brighter day. The world will sing again, the bells will ring again, and lonely hearts are meeting, life begins anew. The sun will rise again, there'll be blue skies again, with not a cloud to hide the loveliness in view. Although your dreams have gone, just smile and carry on. There must be a darkest hour before the dawn. The world will sing again, a song of spring again, for there'll be happiness around the bend for you. And then the dreams you've dreamed will all come
Ajax cuts grease faster than any other leading cleanser.
Use the main, the elbow wax, when you start cleaning with Ajax.
Ajax really polishes as it cleans.
So use Ajax, bum, bum, the foaming cleanser. Bump the dirt right down the drain.
My gosh, they're right. Foaming action Ajax makes even the dirtiest pan shine like new in a jiffy.
So use Ajax!
Another public service announcement. Brill Cream. Men, beware. Use one dab of Brill Cream. Just a little dab makes your hair look excitingly clean, disturbingly healthy. This man dared to use two dabs. Now he's in trouble. We refuse to be responsible.
Brill Cream.
Brill Cream.
Brill Cream.
Brill Cream, a little dab will do ya. Brill Cream, you look so debonair. Brill Cream, the gals will offer to ya. They'll love to get their fingers in your hair.
Brill Cream, a little dab will do ya. Or watch out, the gals will offer to ya.
Get Brill Cream today.
This is Local Voices with a glance back at World War II with Jim Steele on 94.7 KPIP.
Where the blue of the night meets the gold of the day, someone waits for me, and the gold of her hair crowns the blue of her eyes like a halo tenderly. If only I could see her, oh, how happy I would be. Where the blue of the night meets the gold of the day, someone waits for me. The gold of the day, someone waits for me.
stepped off the train, the smile in your eyes like the sun after rain. To mark the occasion, we went out to dine. Remember the laughter, the music, the wine, that drive in the taxi when midnight had flown. Then breakfast next morning, just we two alone. You had to go, the time was so short. We both had so much to say. Your kit to be packed, the train to be caught. Pardon me for crying, but I just felt that way. And now you have gone, dear, this letter I pen. My heart travels with you till we meet again. Keep smiling, my darling, and someday we'll spend a lifetime as sweet as that lovely weekend. Keep smiling, my darling, and someday we'll spend a lifetime as sweet as that lovely weekend.
March 12th, 1933, Franklin Delano Roosevelt gave the first of 30 public radio speeches that would become known as Fireside Chats. During these radio chats, the president would inform the American people and build public support for his administration's efforts during the Great Depression, World War II, and the enactment of New Deal policies. FDR was an extremely accomplished speaker, but it was his candor and empathy that touched the hearts of those Americans dreaming about a better future for themselves and the world. It was these groundbreaking fireside chats that helped form Roosevelt's image as the father figure of the United States of America. This is President Roosevelt's first fireside chat from March 12, 1933, entitled, quote, The Banking Crisis.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
My friends, I want to talk for a few minutes with the people of the United States about banking. To talk with the comparatively few who understand the mechanics of banking, but more particularly with the overwhelming majority of you who use banks for the making of deposits and the drawing of checks. I want to tell you what has been done in the last few days and why it was done and what the next steps are going to be. I recognize that the many proclamations from state capitals and from Washington, the legislation, the treasury regulations, and so forth, couched for the most part in banking and legal terms, ought to be explained for the benefit of the average citizen. I owe this in particular because of the fortitude and the good temper with which everybody has accepted the inconvenience and the hardships of the banking holiday. And I know that when you understand what we in Washington have been about, I shall continue to have your cooperation as fully as I have had your sympathy and your help during the past week. First of all, let me state the simple fact that when you deposit money in a bank, the bank does not put the money into a safe deposit vault. It invests your money in many different forms of credit, in bonds and commercial paper and mortgages and in many other kinds of loans. In other words, the bank puts your money to work to keep the wheels of industry and of agriculture turning round. A comparatively small part of the money that you put into the bank is kept in currency, an amount which in normal times is wholly sufficient to cover the cash needs of the average citizen. In other words, the total amount of all the currency in the country is only a comparatively small proportion of the total deposits in all the banks of the country. What then happened? during the last few days of February and the first few days of March. Because of undermined confidence on the part of the public, there was a general rush by a large portion of our population to turn bank deposits into currency or gold. A rush so great that the soundest banks couldn't get enough currency to meet the demand. The reason for this was that on the spur of the moment, it was of course impossible to sell perfectly sound assets of a bank and convert them into cash except at panic prices far below their real value. By the afternoon of March 3rd, a week ago last Friday, scarcely a bank in the country was open to do business. Proclamations closing them in whole or in part had been issued by the governors in almost all of the states. It was then that I issued the proclamation providing for the national bank holiday. And this was the first step in the government's reconstruction of our financial and economic fabric. The second step, last Thursday, was the legislation promptly and patriotically passed by the Congress, confirming my proclamation and broadening my powers so that it became possible in view of the requirement of time to extend the holiday and lift the ban of that holiday gradually in the days to come. This law also gave authority to develop a program of rehabilitation of our banking facilities. And I want to tell our citizens in every part of the nation that the National Congress, Republicans and Democrats alike, showed by this action a devotion to public welfare and a realization of the emergency and the necessity for speed that it is difficult to match in all our history. The third stage has been the series of regulations permitting the banks to continue their functions to take care of the distribution of food and household necessities and the payment of payroll. This bank holiday, while resulting in many cases in great inconvenience, is affording us the opportunity to supply the currency necessary to meet the situation. Remember that no sound bank is a dollar worse off than it was when it closed its doors last week. Neither is any bank which may turn out not to be in a position for immediate opening. The new law allows the 12 Federal Reserve banks to issue additional currency on good assets, and thus the banks that reopen will be able to meet every legitimate call. The new currency is being sent out by the Bureau of Engraving and Printing in large volume to every part of the country. It is sound currency because it is backed by actual good assets. Another question that you will ask is this: why are all the banks not to be reopened at the same time? The answer is simple, and I know you will understand it. Your government does not intend that the history of the past few years shall be repeated. We do not want and will not have another epidemic of bank failures. As a result, we start tomorrow, Monday, with the opening of banks in the 12 Federal Reserve Bank cities. Those banks which on first examination by the Treasury have already been found to be all right. That will be followed on Tuesday by the resumption of all other functions by banks already found to be sound in cities where there are recognized clearinghouses. That means about 250 cities of the United States. In other words, we're moving as fast as the mechanics of the situation will allow us. On Wednesday and succeeding days, banks in smaller places all through the country will resume business, subject, of course, to the government's physical ability to complete its survey. It is necessary that the reopening of banks be extended over a period in order to permit the banks to make applications for the necessary loans, to obtain currency needed to meet their requirements, and to enable the government to make common sense checkups. Please let me make it clear to you that if your bank does not open the first day, you are by no means justified in believing that it will not open. A bank that opens on one of the subsequent days is in exactly the same status as the bank that opens tomorrow. I know that many people are worrying about state banks that are not members of the Federal Reserve System. There is no occasion for that worry. These banks can and will receive assistance from member banks and from the Reconstruction Finance Corporation. And, of course, they are under the immediate control of the state banking authorities. These state banks are following the same course as the national banks, except that they get their licenses to resume business from the state authorities. And these authorities have been asked by the Secretary of the Treasury to permit their good banks to open up on the same schedule as the national banks. And so I am confident that the state banking departments will be as careful as the national government in the policy relating to the opening of banks and will follow the same broad theories. It is possible that when the banks resume, a very few people who have not recovered from their fear may again begin withdrawals. Let me make it clear to you that the banks will take care of all needs, except, of course, the hysterical demands of hoarders. And it is my belief that hoarding during the past week has become an exceedingly unfashionable pastime in every part of our nation. It needs no prophet to tell you that when the people find that they can get their money, that they can get it when they want it for all legitimate purposes, the phantom of fear will soon be laid. People will again be glad to have their money where it will be safely taken care of and where they can use it conveniently at any time. I can assure you, my friends, that it is safer to keep your money in a reopened bank than it is to keep it under the mattress. The success of our whole national program depends, of course, on the cooperation of the public, on its intelligent support, and its use of a reliable system. Remember that the essential accomplishment of the new legislation is that it makes it possible for banks more readily to convert their assets into cash than was the case before. More liberal provision has been made for banks to borrow on these assets at the reserve banks, and more liberal provision has also been made for issuing currency on the security of these good assets. This currency is not fiat currency. It is issued only on adequate security, and every good bank has an abundance of such security. One more point before I close. There will be, of course, some banks unable to reopen without being reorganized. The new law allows the government to assist in making these reorganizations quickly and effectively, and even allows the government to subscribe to at least a part of any new capital that may be required. I hope you can see, my friends, from this essential recital of what your government is doing, that there is nothing complex, nothing radical in the process. We have had a bad banking situation. Some of our bankers had shown themselves either incompetent or dishonest in their handling of the people's funds. They had used the money entrusted to them in speculations and unwise loans. This was, of course, not true in the vast majority of our banks, but it was true in enough of them to shock the people of the United States for a time into a sense of insecurity and to put them into a frame of mind where they did not differentiate, but seemed to assume that the acts of a comparative few had tainted them all. And so it became the government's job to straighten out this situation and to do it as quickly as possible, and that job is being performed. I do not promise you that every bank will be reopened or that individual losses will not be suffered, but there will be no losses that possibly could be avoided, and there would have been more and greater losses had we continued to drift. I can even promise you salvation for some at least of the sorely pressed banks. We shall be engaged not merely in reopening sound banks, but in the creation of more sound banks through reorganization. It has been wonderful to me to catch the note of confidence from all over the country. I can never be sufficiently grateful to the people for the loyal support that they have given me in their acceptance of the judgment that has dictated our course, even though all our processes may not have seemed clear to them. After all, there is an element in the readjustment of our financial system more important than currency, more important than gold, and that is the confidence of the people themselves. Confidence and courage are the essentials of success in carrying out our plan. You people must have faith. You must not be stampeded by rumors or guesses. Let us unite in banishing fear. We have provided the machinery to restore our financial system, and it is up to you to support and make it work. It is your problem, my friends, your problem no less than it is mine. Together, we cannot fail.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States has spoken to you from the White House in Washington, D.C.
That was President Franklin Delano Roosevelt's first fireside chat from March 12, 1933, entitled The Banking Crisis. Keep listening to A Glance Back for more fireside chats from FDR. This is A Glance Back on 94.7 KPIP.
Thoughts go flashing back again. Now, me why, and I'll tell them, my brother, there are dreams I must gather, dreams with fashion eyes you help me tie. I'll always be near you wherever you are, each night in every prayer, just whisper
Take a glance at the past and present with Jim Steele on 94.7 KPIP.
Long ago and far away, I dreamed a dream one day, and now that dream is here beside me. Long the skies were overcast, but now the clouds have passed. You're here at last. Chills run up and down my spine. Aladdin's lamp is mine. The dream I dreamed was not denied me. Just one look and then I knew that all I longed for long ago was you.
Long ago.
Lamp is mine. The dream I dreamed was not denied me. Just one look and then I knew that all I longed for long ago, so long ago,
it's so foolish to suffer with an ordinary headache when Bromo Seltzer gives you such fast, pleasant, three-way relief.
It's true, Mr. Weed. Bromo Seltzer is so pleasant to take, and it works so fast to help your headache all three ways.
Yes, Bromo Seltzer speedily fights the headache pain itself. Then it goes right to work to soothe the upset stomach and jangled nerves that often may team up with a headache. Try it next time you get a headache. Prove to yourself just how fast it works to help your headache all three ways.
We've tried a lot of headache products, but it's Bromo Seltzer from now on for our family.
You'll say the same thing, too, once you've discovered Bromo Seltzer. So get a bottle today and be prepared at all times to fight a headache fast all three ways.
It's smart to keep Bromo Seltzer both at home and at your place of business.
That's right, folks. Remember, Bromo Seltzer gives you fast three-way help for a headache. It's on sale at all drugstores. Caution, use only as directed. If headaches recur or persist, see your doctor. Get Bromo Seltzer today and...
My headache. Three-way.
Thank you for tuning in to Local Voices this Monday on 94.7 KPIP, brought to you by the Boonslick Historical Society and its president, respected Fayette community member Jim Steele, journalist, graphic designer, and historian. This Glance Back at History edition of the Local Voices program airs every Monday from noon to 4 p.m. and focuses on the music and history of World War II as it affected Fayette, America, and the world. We'll see you next Monday, only on 94.7 KPIP.